This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 22nd of May 2015. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 21st of May 2015, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
Lynn Parker.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are full-time fire staff to be cut, £150 million scheme is back on the cards, and care home improves on report. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Full-time fire staff to be cut. Winchester Fire Station could see its full-time staffing slashed under cost-cutting plans affecting nearly 50 bases across Hampshire, the Chronicle has learned. The city service will be unable to guarantee overnight cover if 14 of the station's 34 full-time posts are cut, a concerned firefighter has said. Between 2 and 5 part-time staff would be on call overnight, meaning they can leave work and go home if they wish. Union representative Andy Collings said the Windle station currently employs 40 staff, 34 full-time and 6 part-time, but warned this would change to 20 full-time and 14 part-time posts under the plans. The way firefighters respond to calls is expected to change, with some heading to incidents in smaller vehicles rather than traditional fire engines. A city firefighter, who asked not to be named, told the Chronicle, "It is worrying at this stage. If this goes ahead, there will be no guaranteed cover in Winchester overnight. We have been going through the risks. There's a lot of heritage and life risk in Winchester. It's scary," he added. You kind of get the impression that the figures will not be understood, so they won't realise what's happening. Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service's proposed cuts are part of a countrywide drive to save up to £5 million by 2017-18, plugging a £12.2 million budget hole forced by government austerity. Winchester firefighters were told this week that their positions are up for review and service chiefs are inviting feedback. Detailed plans will be presented to Hampshire Fire and Rescue Authority on September the 9th, ahead of a formal 12-week consultation. If the proposals go ahead unchanged, Winchester will lose the full-time posts in April 2016. Mr. Collings, Winchester's Fire Brigade's union representative, said, "We're going to be challenging it, because we feel the risk in this area is huge and would warrant whole-time cover throughout the night because of the number of road traffic collisions and things like the prison, the cathedral, which is a massive heritage risk, other heritage risks and further development like Barton Farm. It doesn't sit easy with us." No stations are expected to close in Hampshire, but at a performance review and scrutiny meeting on Tuesday, Chief Officer Dave Curry said almost every one of the service's 50 stations will change in some way. He refused to discuss potential staff cuts with the Chronicle, saying, "If I started to talk about that in the public domain, then I may be presetting a very, very important stage of this process. I fear I will overshadow those professional firefighters' views. I'm visiting all my stations and conversing about the future of the services." Councillor Mark Cooper, Hampshire County Councillor for Rumsey, told the meeting that staff were worried about the effect the revamp would have on performance. Councillor Keith Chapman, Chairman of the Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee, told the Chronicle, we're looking at all possibilities of delivering the service slightly differently. The techniques are changing completely, so regardless of whether we're saving money or not, the way the service is going, it's changing completely. He stressed no decisions have been made, adding, the managers don't always come up with the right ideas or the right way forward. The news comes as the service revealed it spent £1 million on sick pay over the last year as long-term absence rates rose by 20%.
£150 million scheme is back on the cards. Developers are closer than ever to building the Silver Hill scheme with a bus station and affordable housing. TIAA Henderson Real Estate is reviving £150 million plans first approved in 2009 after their preferred scheme making a number of controversial changes was beaten in the courts. The developer has ticked all but a few boxes in its contract with Civic Chiefs and told them it can and will prove the old scheme is financially viable, something they denied whilst pursuing their revised plans. The proposal poised to go ahead includes 95,000 square feet of retail space, a bus station, 287 homes, including 100 discount flats, a new car park, a replacement for St Clement's GP surgery, and improvements to the Broadway. Meanwhile, an independent inquiry into the council's handling of the development has been delayed until September. Councillor Frank Pearson, speaking before he was ousted as council leader last week, said reviewer Claire Lloyd-George has hinted it will be uncomfortable reading for some. The return of a bus station and affordable housing will please campaigners who marched on the Guildhall last year to demand more consultation on major projects. A council report to this morning's cabinet said, having reviewed their financial projections and negotiated with a funding partner, SHW1, Henderson's holding company, consider that the 2009 scheme can be commercially viable and will still bring the benefits that were envisaged when the council approved the scheme. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, the newly elected council leader, would not be drawn on how the bus station will be run if Stagecoach maintains its long-held stance that it cannot afford it. If Stagecoach turns down the lease, the council could run it and charge bus firms a departure tax to help pay the bill, according to the Cabinet report by Corporate Director Steve Tilbury and Head of Legal Howard Bone. But Councillor Pearson previously told the Chronicle that the station will be a white elephant if Stagecoach doesn't run it. On Monday, Councillor Godfrey said, we are a local authority providing public services. We are not a bus company. It shouldn't be our priority. Henderson and the council are free to walk away from their agreement on June the 1st, provided the final conditions have not been fulfilled. The city council could therefore abandon Henderson on this date if it has not proved the scheme is viable. But Henderson has indicated that they will agree to push this back to October the 1st, giving councillors time to evaluate any submissions in light of the Lloyd-Jones report. Decisions on Henderson's viability calculations are expected to be put to a special full council meeting, but the Lloyd-Jones report could be pushed back further, leaving councillors unable to implement any recommendations before they decide on the scheme. Henderson had not replied to a request for comment at the time of going to press.
Care home improves on report. A Winchester care home has bounced back from a scathing report which claimed it needed significant improvements. In its latest report on St Cross Grange, the Care Quality Commission, CQC, gave it a good rating following its inspection in October, which saw the home receive legal warnings over its services. As a result, Hampshire County Council stopped sending anyone to live in the 64-bed facility. The care home was given legal notice to immediately improve its care of elderly patients, many of whom suffer from dementia. This was made after it failed a surprise health watchdog inspection. Their visit was prompted by a cluster of complaints that essential standards were not being met, and inspectors failed the home across 8 aspects of assessed care, including allegations that workers were roughly handling patients and failing to report incidents to the County Council's Adult Services Safeguarding Team. Earlier in 2013, former manager Anne Taylor was struck off by the Nursing and Midwifery Council for allowing a 94-year-old patient to choke to death in 2009. But it seems the home has finally turned a corner. Its manager, Susan Munro, who joined in 2014, said the result was a direct result of multi-million pound investment. She said staff, residents and their relatives of St Cross Grange have pulled together and worked incredibly hard to achieve this good rating. We are delighted with the CQC has recognised the quality of care we provide. We're pleased to welcome new residents to our beautiful home.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Castle. Therese Bertha Castle at Dorset County Hospital on the 10th of May, aged 82. Cull. Lily Valentine, known as Biddy Cull, on the 10th of May, aged 101. Flux. Gwen Flux, on the 12th of May, in Winchester, aged 93. Longhurst, Margaret Longhurst, on the 7th of May at Somerset Nursing Home, York, aged 91. Morton, Robert, known as Bob Morton, on the 14th of May, aged 65. New, Olive Mary New, née Crofts, at Chandler's Ford Nursing Home on the 16th of May, aged 92. Pace, Ivy Winifred Pace, on the 2nd of May, aged 98. Whittaker, Dorothy, known as Dolly, Mary Alice Whittaker, née Talbot, at home on the 17th of May, aged 92. And next, we have Christian comment.
This week it is written by Mary Gray, and she entitles it, We Must Resist Cultural Genocide from ISIS. As Christians prepare for the Feast of the Coming of the Holy Spirit this weekend, I am struck by two things. First, Jesus tells his disciples that the Holy Spirit will remind them of all he said, and secondly, will tell them of the things to come, as referred to in the Gospel of John, chapter 14, verse 26, and chapter 16, verse 13. Memory is crucial to the identity of all communities, but what is happening in the Middle East is that the forces of ISIS are destroying the ancient ruins of entire civilizations. Last week, Dr. Rowan Williams gave a stirring lecture on warrior archaeologists. He appealed for a changed attitude to history. Justice is not settled by appeals to the past, but by the creation of sustainable relations now. How crucial that is illustrated by the emotional appeal of the Dominican sister Diana Momica to the U.S. House of Representatives on May the 13th. Forced by ISIS to leave their convent in Mosul, she and her sisters witnessed the horror spreading throughout the Nineveh Plain. By August the 6th, 2014, Nineveh was emptied of Christians, and sadly, for the first time since the 7th century AD, no church bells rang for Mass in the plain of Nineveh. From June 2014, more than 120,000 people became displaced in the Kurdistan region of Iraq, leaving behind their heritage and all they had worked for over the centuries. This uprooting, this theft of everything that the Christians owned, displaced them body and soul, stripping away their humanity and their dignity. Christian churches were generous in their response. For the displaced Christians, churches were open to accommodate the people. Food and non-food items were provided to meet the immediate needs of the people. And medical health services were also provided. Moreover, the church put out a call, and many humanitarian organizations answered with aid for the thousands affected. Asked, why don't the Christians just leave Iraq and move to another country? Sister Diana responds, why should we leave our country? What have we done? Christianity came to Iraq from the earliest days through the preaching of St. Thomas and other early disciples. Like Christians in other Middle Eastern lands, even while their ancestors experienced persecution, they stayed in their land, building a culture, serving humanity through the ages. The current persecution is the most brutal in their history. Not only robbed of homes, property, and land, Christian heritage is being destroyed as well. ISIS continues to demolish churches, cultural artifacts, and sacred places. Uprooted and displaced, Sister Diana realizes that ISIS plans to evacuate the land of Christians and wipe the earth clean of any evidence that they ever existed. She appealed for help to liberate homes from ISIS, help for people to return and help to rebuild what was destroyed, and to encourage enterprises contributing to inter-religious dialogue. Rewind to the coming of the Spirit. How urgent it is to help all faith communities suffering such crushing loss of identity and memory. How much more crucial for the Spirit of Truth to lead humanity into a more just interfaith future where they will be, as Rowan Williams pleaded, a mutuality of security for conflicting nations.
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836, that's 01962 860836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We have a variety of letters today. We start off with a couple about Silver Hill, perhaps inevitably. Then there are a couple about housing in Winchester. Then a number of comments on the election, both the local and national election, and then a couple of other letters to finish off. So we'll start with the first letter now.
This letter is from Peter Rees, who is the chairman of the Winchester Constituency Labour Party and is headed Not to be Trusted. Sir, the comments by Councillor Pearson about the future of Silver Hill defy comprehension. After damning High Court judgment about Henderson's and the failure of WCC in contractual negotiations, the original 2009 scheme is suddenly possible. Affordable housing, a bus station and other aspects have miraculously become viable. The majority party is quite prepared to circumvent all reasonable democratic procedures to ensure that the original scheme is resurrected without any open and transparent scrutiny whatsoever. There could be no cabinet and no overview and scrutiny committee examination of the proposal. Although the delay of the Lloyd George inquiry into the issues will be later than expected, plans are now being made by them to go full steam ahead, again in partnership with Henderson's, to restore a supposedly unviable scheme. Apparently 2009 did produce enough corporate profit. Henderson's is clearly not to be trusted. They have manipulated the council in negotiations, produced the 2014 scheme which demolished the need for decent social housing, eradicated the bus station, lost the live work units and brazenly told the people of Winchester that unless they got their way they would walk. In the face of huge public opposition and the High Court condemnation, strangely, and as if by magic, they can still make 15 million profit from a plan they said was a disaster. Holding the council to ransom, blatantly ignoring substantial merits, the original scheme is now possible. Amazing. While the council awaits the outcome of the inquiry, Henderson should be dismissed as totally unreliable, dishonourable and discredited partners. Their integrity and probity has been soundly held in contempt by the High Court and overwhelming public opposition. WCC holds the original planning permission. A new partner should be sought to develop the excellent 2009 scheme as soon as possible. A new agreement with the council stating emphatically what is wanted for the people of Winchester, not developers telling us what they want, is now entirely possible. It will take strong political will, transparent scrutiny, determination and courage to do this. Councillor Pearson and the majority party should do this immediately, finally and decisively dismissing Henderson's in the process.
The next letter is on the same subject. This is written by Harvey Cole. It's headed, "About Turn. Sir, when Henderson's decided that the Silver Hill scheme has planning permission was not financially viable, they retained well-known consultants, Deloitte, the accounts and retail experts, MMX Retail, to provide professional support. The council accepted the conclusions on the advice of its estates department. Now that Henderson's have changed their own minds, they have presumably appointed equally eminent consultants to confirm this newfound viability. It needs to be remembered that Henderson's previous advisers found that even the modified scheme that omits affordable housing and the bus station, together with the £1 million payment to the council, generates a development profit that is still significantly below an acceptable developer return. This is on a cost which I believe is in the order of £160 million. It remains to be seen what amendments might have been made to improve viability, and in particular, if the bus station is now to be reinstated. It would be interesting to see if the City Estates Department concurs in the about turn. What is most important of all, however, is whether any changes that may have been made to the original scheme to enhance its profitability properly need planning permission in order to comply with the decision of the High Court earlier this year." That was written by Harvey Cole, Clifton Road, Orams Arbour, Winchester.
And again, Aurora Eastwood writes on the housing crisis. "Sir, I despair. Yet again, I see that Winchester City Council has refused another reasonable planning application. A couple of weeks ago, it was reported that a proposed development of some 50 houses in Kingsworthy was rejected. This week, a barn conversion in Hunton, citing material visual harm. Given that the proposed building is a steel agricultural barn, anything at all would be an improvement. What possible material visual harm is there in cladding a steel barn? We are in the midst of a serious housing crisis. Our children will not be able to afford to buy. If house prices continue to rise at the current rate of 8.6% per year, an average since 1954, the average home will cost more than £3.5 million in 35 years. The source is from eMove. We need to build 240,000 houses per year to meet demand. only 141,000 were built last year. This is a source from the BBC. And figures for previous years were even worse. Only in the 1950s were large numbers being built, some 300,000 per year. This is a critical situation of undersupply. Land around cities, towns and villages needs to be built on. Problems with infrastructure? Deal with it. Widen roads. Improve access. Farm buildings need to be converted. Extensions must be approved to house families who can no longer afford separate properties. Mindsets must be altered. It's already too late, but by opening our eyes to the calamity that faces our children, we can mitigate the effects by relaxing the rules, cutting red tape, and introducing pragmatism to the process, which is sadly lacking. Aurora Eastwood, South Wanston, Winchester.
This letter is headed Drain on Taxpayer. Sir, I read your headline, Landlords Claiming Millions in Benefits, Chronicle May the 7th, with horror. I could not understand how people who own property are eligible for benefits. They are not, of course. They are renting a capital asset to a tenant who is eligible, and it is the tenant, not the landlord, who is the drain on the taxpayer. The government, local or national, can stop paying rent immediately by purchasing or building more government housing. But it cannot splurge on public housing while still dealing with the massive deficit inherited from the government sponsored by the RMB union. Besides, we taxpayers claw back part of the rent through taxes on the landlord. This may be a better deal than council housing, where, in due course, a sitting tenant gets the right to buy at a big discount, thereby depriving us taxpayers who bought it of the benefit of any increases in the value of the property. Your headline was emotive and misleading. Landlords have to claim because historically many recipients of the housing benefit did not use it to pay their rent. Mrs. A. Draper, Hyde, Winchester.
David's children writes, taken for granted. Sir, I read with some surprise your front page report, May the 14th, on the recent local elections, which included the comment from Kelsey Learney, the deposed Lib Dem councillor for Littleton and Hairstock, and the leader of the Lib Dem group on the City Council, was contacting the police regarding the way the Conservatives ran their campaign. I was closely involved with the winning candidate's campaign, and I have to say I saw no such evidence. Paul Twelfthtree and his team put a lot of genuine hard work into the campaign, which was clearly appreciated by the Littleton and Hairstock electorate, who voted accordingly. I think Ms. Learney's comments reflect rather more on the Lib Dems' negative campaigning and the appearance that she took the electorate for granted. The words sore and loser come to mind. Written by David Turner of Frampton Way, Kingsworthy.
Jackie Frampton entitles her letter, "The Reporting Appears to be Biased." Sir, I wish to draw attention to your biased reporting, Campaigners Win Seats on Council. You stated that recently elected Alresford Town Council members Keith Barrett, Ben Gower and Sam Carr-Smiley are opposed to the Sun Lane development. You fail to mention that they all live near to the proposed site and or affected roads. However, you made a special point of telling readers that newly elected councillor Irene Spencer lives on New Farm Road and opposes any house building on the western side of the town. You discussed Roy Gentry's failure to be re-elected in connection with his support of the Sun Lane development. Perhaps the fact that he recently sold his house and land in the centre of Alresford for the building of 8 new homes rang alarm bells with voters opposed to piecemeal development. Jackie Frampton, All Close, Alresford.
This letter is entitled Trouble Brewing. Sir, is this the shape of things to come? Even before Parliament reconvenes, we see the BBC facing castration, the NHS sliced, diced and sold to rapacious American healthcare companies, the tearing up of the Human Rights Treaty, everywhere diminishing the essential functions of the state, the stampede from Europe, the breakup of the Union. Not a bad achievement for a party with the support of less than a third of the electorate. Is that what Britain meant to vote for? Written by Adrian M. Bates, Church Street, Mitchell Deaver.
Jonathan Greatex writes, "How it works, sir. Some of the drivel people concoct and send into your letters page is astounding. I have no problem with folk having an opinion, but when they don't know what they're talking about and wish to lecture, it makes me want to scream. Take the letter this week from John Airey, titled Conservatives Win Hardly a Surprise, in which he goes on to make some suggestions about Marxist David Miliband standing as a leadership candidate. Does John not know how the political system works? To remind him, you need to be an elected MP serving your constituents, which means residing in the UK. David Miliband lives and works in New York. Tory John has more chance than the other brother." Written by Jonathan Greatex of Hursley, Winchester.
Barbara Pierce titles her letter, "Mindless Idiots." "Sir, whilst walking across Oram's Arbour recently, I noticed that a memorial tree has been vandalised, totally snapped in half. Who are these mindless idiots? I wish they could be caught and be made to pay for the damage." Barbara Pierce, Cheriton Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
This is a letter from Andrew Payne and entitled Historically False. "Sir, Duncan Geddes's interesting article on Joan of Arc, Chronicle, May the 14th, contains a number of historical inaccuracies. Cardinal Beaufort did not sentence Joan of Arc to death. Recent research shows that Beaufort was at Westminster attending the English Parliament during her trial. Joan was captured in 1430 by a Frenchman. She was sold to the English and taken to Rouen. The English agreed she be tried by a court of the French Inquisition. The two principal judges were French. All the court officials, the prosecutors, the examiners and the 50 or so assessors who found her guilty of heresy were all French. The trial transcript, which lists on a daily basis all those in attendance, mentions Beaufort once. He appears on May the 24th, 1431, 7 weeks after Joan's trial had ended, 6 days before her death. The Bishop of Beauvais is read out the the Bishop of Beauvais read out the sentence of excommunication and handing Joan over to the secular authority for burning. The secular authority was French. The executioner was French. Over 150 Frenchmen, including the University of Paris, unanimously found Joan guilty of heresy. Beaufort was not there. Delaroche's painting of Cardinal Beaufort interrogating Joan is historically false. Not that this exculpates Beaufort or the English. This peasant girl was as courageous, steadfast, cool-headed and astute in the courtroom as she had been in battle. But there was only one possible outcome. She declared she was sent by God to liberate France. She spoke to God through her voices, St. Margaret, St. Catherine, St. Michael and St. Gabriel, and God spoke to her. She even touched these saints. The French Inquisition could only find her guilty. Beaufort and John Duke of Bedford, Henry the Sixth Regent, the two most powerful Englishmen in France, could have prevented her death. They did not. Her fate could have been different. The chivalric code dictated that her French captor should have ransomed Joan back to the French king. The French king, who owed her his crown, made no offer for Joan, so she was sold to the English. The French do not come out of this story very well." Andrew Payne, Mitchell Deaver Road, Whitchurch.
I'm afraid that there didn't appear to be any items of historical interest in the paper this week, though we've heard quite an interesting little historical item in that last letter. So we now move on to the Chronicle comment, and that will be followed by a first-person comment.
Yes, the editorial comment from the Hampshire Chronicle is headed, "Lives at risk if cuts to services go ahead." A few years ago, there was a radical change to fire cover in Winchester when the station relocated. The move enabled more full-time cover with less reliance on part-time firemen and women. 5 years on, things appear to be reverting back. Managers are proposing to cut the number of full-time personnel. Plans are at an early stage, and management is unwilling to discuss the proposals that are clearly being driven by the need imposed by central government to save money. The public will rightly be worried that such a move, excellent though retained firefighters are, will clearly reduce the level of service. When every second can count, such cutbacks are likely to be sooner or later the result of real danger to life.
And the first-person article this week is written by George Hayter, and he entitles it, "The Night a Subject Got Behind the Queen." Last week's release of a film about the Queen reminded me of royal partying by a man from Hampshire. William Pakenham, a naval officer from the Botley area, once found himself in an intimate sandwich between Princess Elizabeth and Princess Margaret. The carefree dance enjoyed by Sub-Lieutenant Pakenham with the future Queen and her sister was brought to mind by a royal night out, which went on general release last week. The film is a romanticised account of the adventures of the two princesses 70 years ago, when they escaped from the formality of Buckingham Palace to join the drunken crowd celebrating the end of a war against Nazi Germany. For hours, the royal pair went unrecognised as they frolicked among their father's subjects in Trafalgar Square and Piccadilly Circus. They even joined the cheering crowd throng outside the palace as their parents appeared on the balcony. During their unprecedented hours of abandon that night, excited young Elizabeth and Margaret led their chaperones into the staid Ritz Hotel, where they started a conga and snaked their way through elderly hotel guests. Maybe it was the memory of the Ritz that inspired Princess Elizabeth to call for a conga 2 years later, when Sub-Lieutenant Pakenham was present. He was on a ship bringing the royal family back from a tour of South Africa. Pakenham got to know the royals quite well and was among officers having dinner with them one night when the table was cleared and a small dance band struck up. He initiated the dancing by asking the Queen to dance with him. At the end of that number, Princess Elizabeth came up to him and said, "Let's have a conga." And she called out to the band, "Come on, band." In his little-known autobiography, Sometimes at Sea, the Hampshire naval officer describes how the future Queen urged him personally, "Come on, come on," and to her sister, "Come on, Margaret." So the young officer felt he had to put his hands on Elizabeth's hips, and Margaret put her hands on his, and the three of them started to dance, and the rest of the room joined on behind. The line snaked its way through the royal apartments, including the Queen's bathroom. A royal night out starring Canadian Sarah Gadden as Princess Elizabeth is mostly fiction, but there is little doubt that Sub-Lieutenant Pakenham really did find himself between the two young princesses at the head of that joyfully undignified dance on HMS Vanguard. As a senior officer, Pakenham went on to play rather more serious roles. He commanded the Royal Naval Staff College at Greenwich. He worked in Washington to bolster our relations with America, and he helped devise Britain's nuclear deterrent. Sometimes at Sea was published in 2007, but you may be able still to buy a copy on the web. It was published by Talbot Court Press at £9.99.
Lighting up times. Today, Friday the 22nd of May, the sun rose at 5:05 in the morning and will set at 9:00 this evening. Wednesday of next week, the 27th of May, sunrise is at 5:00 in the morning and sunset is at 9:05 in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your memory stick or your player, the person to contact is Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. There's a laminated card with this information inside each envelope, should you need it, but please leave the card in the wallet when you return it.
An American entrepreneur has been awarded an honorary OBE for founding and leading a Hampshire charity dedicated to the life of the author Jane Austen. Dr. Sandy Lerner was awarded for her services to UK culture for Chawton House Library, based at the author's former home. Millions were spent on its restoration, and it has now become an established, world-renowned research and study centre for early English women's writing. Richard Ovenden, Bodley's librarian at the University of Oxford, said, "As a trustee of Chawton House Library, I am thrilled that the chairman of our board has been awarded this honour in recognition of her tremendous passion and commitment to women's writing. It is particularly pleasing as the award also reflects the importance of libraries in the intellectual life of the UK."
Son brews birthday beer for landlord's dad. A Winchester publican has been given the greatest 60th birthday present one could receive from his son, a beer brewed specifically for him. Clive Mansell, landlord of the Queen Inn at St Cross, the Full Flood Arms, the Roebuck Inn and the Plower Ditch in Abbas, celebrated the milestone surrounded by friends and family attending a special function. He was delighted to be presented with C60, a modern IPA with an ABV of 6%, developed by his son and co-owner of the Red Cat Brewery, Andy Mansell.
OAPs lose £30,000 in phone scams. A fraudsters stole £30,000 from Winchester pensioners in a scam involving a fake courier collecting money they convinced their victims to withdraw from the bank. An 89-year-old Twyford woman lost £17,000 from a phone scammer claiming money had been stolen from her account, while an 84-year-old Compton man lost £13,000 to the same con. Last Tuesday, May the 12th, the woman received a call from a person pretending to be a police officer, the force has said. The man told her that money had been stolen from her bank. The victim called her bank to verify the information, but was actually talking to the fraudster who had kept the phone line open. The woman pretended she worked for the bank and told the victim to do what the police officer said. She then spoke to the man again. He convinced her to withdraw £8,000 from her bank, which was collected from her home on Dolphin Hill, Twyford, by a man at around 6:30 p.m. that day. On the following 2 days, May the 13th and the 14th, the victim was convinced to withdraw more money. At 5 p.m. on May the 13th and 6 p.m. on May the 14th, a man arrived to collect more money. On May the 15th, the victim returned to her bank to withdraw a further £8,000, but the bank became suspicious and contacted the police. The conman who collected the money on May the 12th is described as white, slim, in his 30s, around 5'10", with short brown hair, dressed smartly in a white shirt and dark jacket. The man who collected the money on the other occasions is described similarly, police said. but the other victim was unsure about his hair colour. Meanwhile, on Wednesday, May the 13th, the 84-year-old man received a phone call from a person using the same scam. He was convinced to withdraw £7,000, which was collected by a man from his home in Compton at around 6:30 p.m. that day. This was repeated on May the 14th, and a different man collected £6,000 at 7:30 p.m. Police are appealing for anyone who may have seen the two men or a grey Peugeot which may be linked to the incident. The man who collected the money on May the 13th is described as mixed race, in his mid-20s, no taller than 5 feet, skinny, and wearing a duffel raincoat with a brown hood. His conspirator, who attended on May the 14th, is described as black, in his early 20s, 5'8", slim and smartly dressed. Detective Constable Alexander Hall said, "These offenders are targeting the elderly and vulnerable members of our communities and are stealing huge amounts of money from them. Money that these people have worked their entire lives for. Police officers will never ask people to withdraw money from the bank, so if you are asked to do this, it is not real. It's a scam."
Man is jailed for underage sex. The head teacher of a Hampshire school where a man had sex with an underage teenager 6 times has said she is appalled. Sam Dickerty was jailed for sleeping with a 15-year-old girl at Henry Beaufort in Winchester. The 23-year-old was working as a learning support assistant, and the two had sex in a teachers-only area known as the Harbour. Head teacher Sue Hurl said, "I am appalled at this individual's dreadful breach of a position of trust. When the allegations against Mr. Dickerty were brought to my attention, I suspended him. He was subsequently dismissed for gross misconduct. The safety and well-being of our students is an absolute priority. Our staff are fully aware of the safeguarding protocol and the need for vigilance. Pupils are aware of whom they can talk to if they think they or one of their peers may be vulnerable, whether that is within school or outside of school. Dickerty of Tadburn Road, Romsey, was jailed for 4 years as his girlfriend, pregnant with his child, wept in the public gallery at Winchester Crown Court. He first slept with the schoolgirl after she pursued him with notes and messages. He gave her his phone number and email address. In one message, he said he wished she wasn't 15. They slept together over several months on school property, which continued until Dickerty's birthday, when the girl asked another pupil to deliver a birthday card to him. It was intercepted by her mother, who reported it to the school. The card said, 'I love you so much and you mean everything to me. You are my handsome Sam. P.S. You'll get your present on Thursday, ha ha.' Claire Marlowe, prosecuting, said the headmistress spoke to Mr. Dickerty at that stage, said that nothing had happened in any way. He was reminded of the safeguarding rules and warned not to have one-to-one contact with her thereafter. They continued to meet in the harbour for sex for another 2 months, the court heard. Ms. Marlowe said this came to light during school holidays because there was a message on Facebook, which is the parents, because they will not allow her to have her own, from him asking whether she was going to be in a particular location that day. Dickerty pleaded guilty to 5 of 6 charges relating to sexual activity with a child. Mitigating, Rena Marie Hill said, the impact of this will stay with him for the rest of his life and he will pay the consequences for the rest of his life. Sentencing, Judge Susan Evans, QC, said, you took advantage of your 15-year-old victim. You groomed her. The location is an aggravating factor because it was on school property. And most seriously, you failed to respond to the warning you were given. Dickerty will also be on the sex offenders register for life and disqualified from working with children and vulnerable people.
Busk aids Nepal. Members of the Winchester Uke Jam and Winchester Fusion Choir joined forces to entertain passers-by down by the Buttercup Cross and raise money for the Nepal Earthquake Appeal. In just 2 hours last Wednesday, they raised an impressive £850. Andy Martin, who runs the Winchester Uke Jam and who instigated the idea of the busk, said, "The generosity of the people of Winchester knows no bounds. What a fantastic result. Hopefully we have done a little to help." Members of the choir retired to a local cafe to count all the money. They then duly handed it into a delighted Oxfam.
New member snub. Bishop's Waltham Parish Council is scaring off potential councillors from filling its vacancies, a meeting was told as two volunteers were snubbed. There were tense exchanges at the meeting last week as some councillors called for criteria to ensure new members fit the bill. The council welcomed three new councillors, George Westcombe, Bruce Taylor and Robin Howe, but three vacancies remain. Councillor Robert Shields opposed immediately co-opting extra members despite two residents putting themselves forward at the meeting. He said, "We have three new councillors and it takes time for them to learn to become a parish councillor. The thought that we need to have six new parish councillors when we have a lot of difficult business in front of us would be unfair on them and unfair on the other councillors." Speaking from the public gallery, veteran parish councillor Dorothy Quinney said they were insulting the volunteers who had arrived. One walked out after 40 minutes of discussion, while Chris Dugmore, a young local businessman, questioned whether a fit and proper person test was needed for someone who wanted to help the community. Eric Birkbeck, another former councillor, added, "You're in danger of frightening away those people who wish to be parish councillors. There's two here, one just left, and that's very sad." Meanwhile, Tracy Conduct saw off a challenge from Councillor Terry Wilson to be re-elected chairman, while Councillor Barry Nicholson was voted vice-chairman over Councillor Shields.
Now we have quite a... Oh, sorry. Can we cut that? Oh. Westgate, a super school to be proud of. With sharpened pencils, pressed white shirts pressed, and books at the ready, Winchester school children looked on proudly as part of their new super school was officially unveiled. Pupils at Hampshire's first all-through school, which takes in children from aged 4 to 16, Westgate School, welcomed prospective parents, county councillors and the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson. The new lower school will provide an extra 420 primary school places for Winchester children. It includes 14 new classrooms and two libraries. The large hall, which can be separated into a music room and gymnasium, was opened to the first set of reception pupils in September. Mr. Atkinson paid tribute to the children, unveiling a new plaque before pupils gave tours and handed out drinks and canapés. He said, "I think it is absolutely stunning and it's a great example of what can be done in Hampshire. As it is the first all-through school, it is a wonderful achievement. The thing that surprises me is the sheer number of places that the county requires and the facilities they have built here are quite stunning. It's bright and airy and modern. Even down to the little touches, look at the blinds on the outside of the windows to stop the rooms from overheating. Little things like that can help the children be comfortable while learning." Lower school leader Stuart Adlam added, "It's great to mark the opening of the school and it's the start of our journey. We've got a fantastic facility for our lower and secondary pupils as well. The school, which costs around £7.5 million to develop, forms part of the Hampshire County Councillor's £15 million investment into primary school places." During his speech, Council Leader Roy Perry said, Finding sites for the new buildings required to meet the additional places in Winchester was a challenge for the officer. Locations for the new primary schools are not easy to find, especially in popular cities. We then realised that our separate plans to withdraw from boarding provision here offered a perfect opportunity to create a site for a new building. It was evident from our strategic planning that the additional pupils were living in the heart of the city, and I was delighted when the Westgate School responded so positively to our need.
Man hid to spy on his ex-wife. A Charles Ford man hid under the bed of his former wife when he suspected that she was seeing another man. Louis Davis, 27, slipped into the house when his wife Emma went out, Southampton Crown Court was heard. Prosecutor Rachel Robertson said that after she returned, she was sitting on her bed when she heard a noise. Looking under the bed, she found Davis there. Clutching her computer, she ran out of the house, but he caught up with her and attacked her. He then rode off on a bike, but the drama was seen by a neighbour who called the ambulance service. Davis of Falkland Road admitted assault by beating and stealing the laptop. He also pleaded guilty to injuring a boy when his pushchair was knocked over and he suffered a facial cut which required stitching. Said to have 20 previous convictions, he received a 9-month suspended sentence coupled with 2 years supervision. Judge Peter Rowles, QC, passing sentence, said, "You behaved in a bullying way and one that won't be tolerated." Audrey Archer, in mitigation, said that Davis had discovered that his ex-wife had been having an affair, adding, "He overreacted."
Litter clean-up promised. Council chiefs are banding together to cut down roadside litter after guideline changes led to complaints of mounting rubbish. The A34 and the A303 were left noticeably dirtier in spring after severe vegetation cuts and new safety regulations for high-speed roads. A series of fatal accidents nationwide led to a raft of new rules for litter pickers, from marked vehicles and signage to lane closures. Winchester City Council apologised for the delayed clean-up in March, but is now coordinating with other authorities and agencies to get back on track. A clean-up is underway on the A34 and A303, while other routes in the district have already been cleared after extra resources were drafted in. Sadly, completed roads are already experiencing further littering, a City Council spokesman said. The council will be working on an education campaign to try to tackle the root cause of the problem, which in most cases is motorists throwing items out of cars. The position will soon be business as usual, with roads subject to routine litter picking.
Banner protest over lorry traffic. A campaign to curb lorry traffic in Oldsford reached a peak last week as trucked-off residents condemned civic chiefs for failing to clamp down. The trucked-off campaign says lorries are clogging up streets and threatening road safety. They fear development plans on fields off Sun Lane will worsen the problem. Lorries and trucks are serving Oldsford salads in the Nithe with imported food on Sundays and bank holidays, protesters say. Activities picked up last week for Sunday's Watercress Festival as trucks full of extra food were driven into the market town. Campaigner Alicia Salter said, "Even usually well driven, these behemoths are just too big for country lanes and small Georgian market towns, damaging houses, roads and verges, creating continuous noise and air pollution, and year-round strain and distress to residents who live within feet of them." Banners and flags have gone up around the town to raise awareness of the campaign. Ms Salter said Hampshire, Winchester and Oldsford councils have ignored local appeals and hope they will give up. But the new banners require planning permission, town clerk Steve Kavanagh told Alresford Town Council last Thursday.
And another article about a protest, this time in Winchester. Part of Winchester's bustling high street was brought to a standstill when peaceful protesters took to the streets. Known as the Winchester People of Action, a group of around 30 gathered at the Brooks Centre, placards in hand, to stand against austerity measures. Scribbled signs fashioned from cardboard were held high as the loud hailer sounded for a quiet but united front against cuts. The group, who partially blocked the entrance for Primark on one of the busiest days of the week, claims to be striving for social justice and working to build a better community. Andy and Seri proudly displayed their personalised messages. Seri's message, "The power of the people is stronger than the people in power." Their aim is to stand against the cuts that target the vulnerable in society and weaken the economy, according to its Facebook page. They hope to reform what they deem to be an unfair system and raise awareness of the Human Rights Act.
Huge variety of events to mark Agincourt heritage. 600 years ago, King Henry V rode through Hampshire on his way to a decisive battle in the Hundred Years' War. And his victory over the French at Agincourt will come roaring back to life this summer with a series of walks, talks, plays and historic oddities inspired by the anniversary. A two-year programme, backed by Arts Council England and the Heritage Lottery Fund, will explore and shed new light on the events of 1415. Stage highlights include Beyond the Dark Water, a touring play depicting the Southampton plot against the King's life during his time in the city. The cast will follow in the schemer's footsteps at historic venues in Porchester, Southampton, Netley and Hamble Rice over 2 weeks in July and August. One of Hampshire's biggest celebrations will be a four-day Road to Agincourt festival in the ruins of Bishop Altham's palace, where King Henry stayed before charging into battle. A picnic performance of Shakespeare's The Tempest will kick festivities off on Thursday, July the 16th, followed the next day by an open-air screening of Kenneth Branagh's Henry V. Around 1,500 people are expected for the main Saturday and Sunday events, with battle reenactments, archery, falconry demonstrations, weapon making, medieval music, and more. Sunday's finale will be the return of Bishop's Waltham Music Festival, ditching the Middle Ages for blues, acoustic, rock, and electronica. History buffs can enjoy a more cerebral take on Agincourt with exhibitions, talks, and tours. So what did Agincourt do for Netley? We'll take visitors through the village to explain the oxen, shipwood, and lodging which played a part in the journey. The tour starts at 2:30 p.m. on June the 20th at Abbey Hall Car Park. The tickets cost £2. Other events include the War on Land and Sea Conference from July the 31st to August the 1st at Southampton University, and talks across the country on Shakespeare, ships, medieval strategy, and Agincourt. And this article is accompanied by a photograph of a rather determined and sudden-looking young man dressed in chainmail with a crown on his head and brandishing a sword. I don't think I would like to meet him in the dark.
And here is another success story, along with a nice photograph of some very happy-looking students from Sparsholt. The story of the hop is show success. Sparsholt wins Chelsea gold. It is the event that draws millions of green-thumbed gardeners from far and wide, and again this year Sparsholt College has struck gold. Horticultural students from the college have spent over the 9 months designing and building their entry for the RHS Chelsea Flower Show, which opened on Tuesday. The team of 14 won a gold medal and best discovery exhibit at the show. The exhibit tells the story of the hop, which for centuries has been enjoyed in beer with their hop cycle garden. The garden has two display areas, one planted with species that make or flavour drinks, and the other a pub garden to relax in. It even has a water feature, complete with foaming beer and an original 1880 penny farthing on loan from the Hampshire Cultural Trust. Chris Bird, horticultural expert and lecturer who led the team, said RHS Chelsea is this country's most prestigious flower show, so for our students to come here and win both a gold medal and a best discovery exhibit is an incredible achievement. They have had to work incredibly hard for the honour, but their huge efforts have reaped them the ultimate prize. As horticulturalists embarking on their professional career, there can be no greater stepping stone than the RHS Chelsea Gold. The college has been sponsored by Wadworth, which has donated a painted pub sign for the garden. Mr. Bird said the students have enjoyed working alongside the brewery. Student Roy Townsend, 29, said, "It has been fantastic to be part of. It was one of the reasons I came on the course. We didn't know what to expect, but it has been fantastic so far. It is organised chaos with everyone working together, but the team work really comfortably and communicate properly. The college has a long history of success at the Flower Show, since 1998, achieving 6 gold medals, 3 silver gold, 4 silver and 3 bronze."
And another story about Sparsholt College. This one is headed "Monster Claims Over Energy Plan." Plans for a new renewable energy plant near Winchester have divided its local parish. Sparsholt College's anaerobic digester, a large biogas-producing boiler, has caused concern amongst its parishioners, worried about traffic problems, smell and its size. College officials have claimed the plant will produce around 5 megawatts of energy, enough to power 1,330 kettles at once. Though its size is yet to be confirmed, up to 3 of these individual components, fed on grass and maize, will be housed on the site. It is hoped the digester will create jobs for students, and the excess produce from the digesters will be used as fertiliser across the college estate. But Sparsholt Parish Council is concerned about large tractors bringing in crops to feed the digesters and clogging narrow roads. Though a formal application is yet to be submitted, Chairman Sue Wood said, "Without any formal discussions with Tim Jackson, the college principal, the council is not able to comment at this time. The implications on the village with its single-track roads are our top priority." Mr. Jackson said, "We have, of course, said to the parish council that we will be continuing with the consultative dialogue with them, providing appropriate information when this becomes available to local residents concerning any of the ideas and plans at a formative stage, which is exactly what we have done in the past." Countryside campaigner Douglas Patterson, chairman of Keep Hampshire Green, called the digester a monster in green clothing. He said, "I'm pro-renewable energy, but it's got to be the appropriate thing in the right place and must reduce carbon emissions, and everything I've read is not the case. The whole point of renewable energy is to reduce our impact on the environment and to replace fossil fuels and coal in particular. There are many different ways in which we can have an impact on the environment, both locally and globally. The Sparsholt proposal is bad. It would be terribly intrusive for the community of Sparsholt and would have a poor environmental footprint. It's a monster. People just don't understand the figures, and they realise that this is the wrong proposal in the wrong place."
continuing the theme of something green, but a new slot. new record holder cresses to impress. He's a record breaker. Glenn Walsh celebrated reclaiming both his title and beating the current fastest watercress eating record by downing a bag of the leaves in less than a minute at this year's Watercress Festival in Oxford on Sunday. The eye-watering contest was the culmination of a day of family fun in the town, which saw thousands of people packing the streets, enjoying the sunshine and party atmosphere. And organisers said it was the biggest event in the festival's history, with an estimated 15,000 people and 140 stalls. There was live music, Morris dancing, face painting, fairground rides, cookery demonstrations, and a whole host of stalls offering a wide range of locally produced food and drink, as well as art and crafts. Stall holders had done their best to come up with new ways to feature watercress in their products, with the most unusual offerings being watercress fudge, watercress soap, watercress wine, and watercress beer. Crowds browsed the stalls, but hundreds of people gathered round for the World Watercress Eating Championships, which included a number of chefs from the village. But it was 37-year-old Oxford resident Glenn who triumphed over his rivals, smashing the world record as he did so. He finished his bag of watercress in a time of 46.59 seconds, knocking several seconds off the record of 49 seconds held by last year's winner and fellow local rugby player Sam Batho from Oxford. Glenn is a regular in the competition and has won the title five times. Festival organiser Clive Burgess said, "It's been superb. I think people have thoroughly enjoyed themselves and people keep saying they'll be back next year. It's been far busier than previous years. People have got behind the idea of watercress and it's increasingly becoming a watercress-focused festival. The one-day festival has grown in recent years to become one of the biggest public events in Hampshire."
TV flop, not the end for comic. A Hampshire chef has said that he is hoping to continue his fledgling TV comedy career. It comes despite being buzzed off stage by some of the country's biggest judges. Peter Cumin, 52, appeared on Britain's Got Talent with his stand-up comedy act, but it didn't go according to plan. Within seconds, the judges, Simon Cowell, Amanda Holden, David Walliams and Alicia Dixon, all hit their buzzers to send him off stage. It has now been, after the show, organisers posted a video of the Winchester Funny Man online. It has now been viewed more than 200,000 times, and Mr. Cumin said the response has been brilliant. "It didn't go so well that I was dreaded being on television, but it seems to have gone the other way with the YouTube clip," he said. Off stage, David Walliams had a nice chat with me. He read my book and said I should keep writing. I came home feeling quite good. Mr. Cumin of Sycamore Drive in Kingsworthy is a chef at the Plough Inn in Itchin Abbas. He opened his audition with, "I used to be obsessed with pantomimes, but thankfully that's all behind me." When prompted by Judge Simon Cowell about the presence on the table on stage, he said, "I just wanted to make sure I had some stage presence." But Judge Alicia Dixon was not impressed and said, "Can you buzz twice?" before adding, "I really hope you're a good chef." Peter's partner Lucy sat in the audience watching on with her head in her hands. And when Peter got buzzed off, all she could say was, "Thank God that's over." But that still hasn't put Mr. Cumin off. He wants to continue working on his comedy and testing material on his Facebook friends. The talent show, hosted by Anton Deck, searches for the country's best act and the prize is to perform in front of the Queen at the Royal Variety Show. Last weekend saw the last of the auditions, and now the judges have to pick the contestants for the fine semi-finals due to be shown next week. But the but the judges will have to rely on the public vote to get their favourites through. Their only task is to choose which act goes through to the final in second place.
Wacky races and outfits. A SpongeBob onesie and Smurf outfits might not screen the typical biker image for some, but when a special charity motocross event was held in Winchester on Saturday, it brought together all manner of motor-mad men and women. The Tony Motor Track in Headbourne Worthy saw over 100 spectators cheering on the many riders who took to the tricky track for charity. While some added simple accessories, such as furry helmets, to their usual attire, others went the full hog, donning a Captain America outfit. There were many sharp hills and tight turns carved into the site off Down Farm Lane, which the riders did well to navigate on a dry and sunny day. From little scooters to larger bikes, they nipped and dived and skidded across the course, taking their time through the bollarded chicane, all in the name of good causes. Marie Curie, orchid cancer, and the Giggle Doctors were just a few names marked across the riders' T-shirts. And there's a photograph of three of the riders here, Tom Skinner, Jamie Duffin and Jason Wittering. They're carrying their crash helmets under their arms, but they are dressed as Smurfs, with bright blue outfits and white floppy bobble hats.
Something a bit more sober. Seat could disappear, admits MP. A Hampshire MP admits he could soon be out of a job, as his constituency may soon be about to disappear. Conservative George Hollingbury became Meon Valley MP for the second time at the election, but he may well be its only ever representative in the House of Commons if it is scrapped as part of a major boundary review. A review started under the last Parliament was not finished, but may now be completed after the Tories swept to power in the general election. Meon Valley was only created as a constituency in 2010 from parts of the Winchester, East Hampshire and Havant constituencies, with Mr. Hollingbury elected as its first MP. But it may now be broken up and divided into neighbouring constituencies if the government decides to stick with the findings of the last review. Mr. Hollingbury said, "I genuinely don't think anybody knows. It may be they pick the old one up, but on the other hand, they did the last one of the 2010 boundaries, and it might be that they want to do it on the most modern make-up. My instinct is that they will pick up the old one so they don't have to waste time. But for now, who knows?" Mr. Hollingbury first contested a parliamentary election in 2005 when he fought Winchester against Mark Oughton.
Political dynasty sinks roots. Move over Clinton, move over Bush. A new political dynasty has risen in Winchester. The Ruffle clan made for one of the oddities of this month's district elections, a son joined father on the city council. Tom Ruffle, 26, landed a decisive victory in his first political campaign to join his father, Lawrence. Belgarum believes this is a generational tag team, is a first, but thought to check with some seasoned Guildhall friends. Previous parent-child combinations do appear to have taken office in Winchester before, but not at the same time. The last, Ken and Ian Merritt, served Durley and Upham and Olsbury and Curdridge in the 1990s and 2000s. Reaching further back was Esme Verney, Cheriton councillor on the old Rural District Council and mother of councillor Harry Verney. And Labour veteran and former councillor Patrick Davies told Belgarum, "I remember her sounding off about doing warm-up at meetings for Winston Churchill."
Mother and baby in car smash. A baby and its mother were rescued and taken to hospital after their car hit a tree in Winchester. The woman, believed to be in her late 20s, was freed from the vehicle by firefighters after the alarm was raised. Ambulance staff helped the baby, which was about 20 months old, from the car, and it was taken to hospital along with the woman. Emergency services were called to the scene on Chilbolton Avenue, which happened at 9:51pm last Friday. A Hampshire Fire and Rescue spokesman said the child was fine. It was in a child's seat, which has done its job. The female was extricated from the vehicle, which was fairly difficult because of the position of the vehicle. She was taken to hospital, and so was the baby. The woman was said to have lower leg injuries.
Canoeists make a splash for club. It couldn't have been a better day to be on the water. As the sun shone down on the glistening River Itchen, around 50 canoe enthusiasts took to their boats for a bit of healthy competition. Winchester and District Canoe Club members gathered for the annual slalom event, which is nearly as old as the club itself, at the North Walls Recreation Ground on Saturday. Children and adults of all ages and abilities turned out to compete in the event's 10 categories. The event was hailed as a great success. And this article is accompanied by a colour photograph of four canoes being proudly held by a legion of small boys of varying sizes in their colourful outfits with life jackets on, obviously, and the paddles and so on, and the very colourful canoe boats themselves. Good luck to them.
That concludes our extracts for the week. Let's hope that the sunny weather that was referred to on that last article continues over this coming bank holiday weekend.
Yes.
Our thanks to our editors, who were Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and thanks to our various technical teams. And thank you, as always, to our readers, who were Margaret Meredith.
Goodbye.
Lynn Parker.
Goodbye.
And Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you are able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.